When you invest in ETFs, your capital is at risk. This show is for professional investors only.
So, hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Thematic Matters. Today, we'll be taking a deep dive into the airlines theme. My name is Jake Coulson, investment writer at Han ETF. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, the airline industry was booming as carriers streamlined their operations, improved their balance sheets, and managed to grow profits by introducing more ancillary fees. But COVID disrupted the industry immensely. However, the sector is rapidly approaching pre-pandemic levels. According to the International Air Travel Association, global air traffic is currently at 88% of pre-pandemic levels. And as the summer travel season approaches, the stage is set for a recovery as early as this year, if airlines can meet the expected surge in demand. The US Global Jet UCITS ETF aims to capture the recovery of the global airline industry, tracking companies within the commercial airline, airline manufacturing, and airport services industries. So to cover this in detail, we are joined by Frank Holmes, the CEO of US Global Investors. US Global Investors runs the US listed version of JETS, which has over 1.7 billion in assets under management. So without further ado, welcome Frank.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
It's brilliant to have you on here. I just thought, Frank, to start off, perhaps you could introduce US Global Investors and tell us a little bit about who they are.
Well, U.S. Global is an investment boutique in San Antonio, Texas. We have a unique perspective of global funds and global ETFs. We have a quantamental approach to stock picking and asset allocation within a portfolio. We write a weekly blog that goes out to 80 countries, 100,000 readers. So we try to keep in tune with what's happening in the capital markets, known for gold. And being that experience of being a global investor led me to create JETS in 2015 because I noticed that there was a huge opportunity. There was no other airlines ETF. And I wanted to create a product which they call Smart Beta 2.0. And that means you're using a quant approach to not only the portfolio construction, but the individual stock picking methodology, and you're applying laws of physics of mean reversion and momentum to the stock selection, and you do it on a rebalancing every quarter.
And why was it the airline sector that appealed to you when you were creating this ETF? What's the case in your mind for this sector?
Well, after the crisis of 2009, we saw over the next 5 years several bankruptcies in airlines. And we then noticed the ramifications of that were less options to fly around the world and prices were going up. So we said, oh, well, how do we get our money back? You know, for all this global travel we're doing for our gold funds. And it was sort of like a bit of a joke at the beginning in humor, but actually becoming quite serious. And so we launched this, and we really want to make sure that we want to be the first to have this Smart Beta 2.0, they call it. And there's no other airlines. So today, JETS is listed in London, JETS is listed in New York, JETS is listed in Mexico City, and JETS is listed in Lima. And we have other stock exchanges around the world for this unique company or ETF to show its presence.
And obviously, more recently, right, coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, we've seen gradually, country by country, they've been lifting the restrictions that were imposed in order to stop the pandemic, right?
We did see, you know, the further left a political situation, and in all our other prospectuses, we always write that we track government policies because they are usually a precursor to change. And so we look at monetary and fiscal policies of the G20 countries, and we map them out and look for leading indicators to get a flavor for commodity demand, travel demand, and our new focus has also been luxury goods because they're very much tied at the hip with our Chinese research, along with air travel. So that is our thought process that we have to follow and track this on a weekly basis. And purchasing manufacturers index is a good reflection of economic forecasting. It shows you the demand expected in 6 months. So it's a wonderful leading indicator.
And China's an interesting one that you've mentioned, right? Because it was probably the last country to
what we
to
saw lift these. Was that the more kind of communist, or you say the more left on a spectrum a country was, the more severe the lockdowns were, and the more sort of liberty democracies further to the right from center, they had more open model. So Dubai was much more open. And if we take a look at in North America, Canada was more severe than the US, and states in America also bifurcated in that lockdown. Well, the most severe was China. And China's economic, I'm giving you the positive news, is that it's behind us. And China's economic data blew expectations out of the water last week, reflecting a strong comeback from the Asian giant as it finally emerges from the world's most restrictive pandemic area lockdowns. And the positive results are so constructive for industries and sectors, especially air travel and global luxury goods. And I just came back from Milan doing a due diligence with meeting CEOs in the luxury goods. And what was positive to see there was the huge demand picking up. Now, pre-COVID, China was what, a third of all luxury goods sales, which were running around $100 billion in sales a year from luxury goods. 35% of that was China. Well, that fell, and today that is making a huge comeback, not only in air travel, but it's also in luxury goods. And the richest man in the world now is the CEO of LVMH. So it is an important sort of relationship to look for, the Chinese now traveling, and it gets lost with a sea of 1.4 billion people. There are about 300 million middle-class workers there that are making $100,000 a year. So they want to travel, and then they end up spending money, and they all, you can see them lining up in Milan in front of Chanel, in front of Dolce & Gabbana. It was interesting. It didn't matter the stores. There was lineups, and I could see easily they were dominated by Asian travelers.
And in some respects, I guess you could say that China was the last piece of the puzzle, right? I mean, it's the last country that's reopened its borders to air travel in a way.
Wait till the summer comes. You know, in the first quarter, China's GDP grew a healthy 4.5%. But more important is the retail sales in March jumped 10% on a year-over-year basis. That's unseen in 2 years. And Citibank has a Citi China Economic Surprise Index, which measures data surprises relative to market expectations, and it hit a whopping 17-year high. Now UBS comes out, and UBS is projecting huge growth in airline travel and significant growth in demand for luxury goods. So it is important for looking for China for commodity demand, which is something for my gold funds and resource funds look at. But at the same time, you have this huge wealthy middle class that want to travel. And there's a high correlation that the wealthier the middle class is, the greater the air travel is, especially going to Europe for historical significance and for luxury spending.
So in many ways, the stage is set right for a recovery of airlines this year. I mean, we've obviously spoken about China. What do you think are the most important things that need to happen in order for airlines to make that recovery this year?
You know, Chinese airlines, you know, are gradually increasing capacity, and they're projected to hit about 75% of their 2019 levels. So after 3 years of these strict lockdowns, many middle and high income Chinese shoppers are eager to travel internationally. And the problem is the air capacity is currently only 22%. There's a shortage of pilots. The pricing power the airlines have is immense. And so you're seeing the airline tickets had the biggest inflation last year, but that didn't stop people from traveling. And two, you saw that that people in particular want to get out of cloudy, rainy days. They want to go to Spain and Europe. They want to go to Italy. And if you looked at the PMI, the Purchasing Manufacturers Index, which is a leading indicator, well, the strongest countries in Europe have been Spain and Italy. And you can see that in Chinese tourism flying there. When I was in Milan, I saw on the runway was Chinese Air, huge jumbo jets on the runway. So I think it's extremely positive. It's estimated that over 100 million outbound trips from mainland China will take place. And that's about two-thirds of 2019 traffic. So I'm going to share with you, it's very, very positive. And what people don't realize, I live in Texas. And in Texas, when that horse is taking off and you want to say, whoa, easy boy, easy boy. Well, I got to tell you about EasyJet. Whoa, that's up a whopping 57% year to date. It's almost like in Europe, people are gloom and doom. And I understand the sadness over the Ukraine war, but the airlines, it's travel's up. Wheels are up, wings are tipping up. You take a look at Air France, up 25%. Germany's Lufthansa, up 24%. Ireland's Ryanair, up 21%. And BA, up 21%. So it's very positive what we're seeing for airline travel. And we're going to get back, like we have in the U.S., to pre-pandemic levels. Well, when China gets to that level, you're going to see pricing power on tickets. You're going to see all these ancillary fees that they were charging before. They fell, and they're now making a big comeback, which is easy money for them. This, I'm just so thrilled to see, by the way, in Milan Airport, where lots of easy jets.
I think it's so interesting what you're saying there about pricing power, right? And something you just mentioned, and I noticed I mentioned it in my intro as well, is this idea of ancillary fees. And for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with the term, can you sort of explain what they are and why they're so important to the airline sector?
The ancillary fees?
Mm.
It's like free money. It's beautiful. but it's terrible for you and I to travel, but that doesn't matter because it's basically a significant part of global GDP. Airlines industry, directly and indirectly, are 9% of global GDP. So the health of the airlines is very, very important for tourism, luxury goods, and business activity. And what we also have is China is going to continue to grow, which is huge demand, and business travel is expected to pick up also, which still has lagged. It's been tourism, which has been the dominant player. So I think that we're going to see this beautiful runway, and then the airlines start to say, oh, you want to change a ticket? Oh, that's 50 euros. That's 200 euros. That's 50 pounds. You know, you start seeing, oh, you want that extra bag. That's not going to be $50 or 50 euros or 50 pounds. That's going to be 200. So they will incrementally start increasing those ancillary fees. And the other part that the U.S. airlines, which dominate air travel, and Jets ETF is dominated by the four big airlines in America because they do dominate global travel. It's a reflection of that. But they make a lot of money from, Delta does, from having their American Express credit card. You're seeing American Express open up their own executive lounges in America, and it's going to happen all over the world. And they are beautiful. So I see that the airlines, like American Airlines during COVID, they were making a ton of money from their relationship for credit cards. So I think that credit card business is ancillary fees. I think baggage is ancillary fees. I think check-on and the discount airlines, they charge for everything. The ticket may be cheap, but you're going to pay for water. You're going to pay for a bag of potato chips, and they get the charge of premium because there's nowhere else to go.
And something else that I was thinking of discussing as well, Frank, not so long ago, we had the pleasure of welcoming you over to the UK. And I recall you discussing about the way sort of US airlines have a history of hedging the price of oil. I wonder if you could explain a little bit about that and why that's something airlines do and what the sort of effects of that are.
Well, you know, it's interesting for me. What I've noticed is that there is a huge audience of hedge funds that like to play the transportation, trains, trucks, and airplanes. And jets is the key product for them when they want to go short an airline. And the airlines, they predominantly like to short, if it's not mismanagement, but it's usually the price of oil. So they look for the airlines which are not hedging. And they want to go short them when the price of oil is above the 50-day moving average. And airlines like American Airlines, Allegiant, and so when we take a look at that, this is the model. So you get bigger volume and trading in certain airlines. So they will go long jets, and then they will short various airlines. And it gives them a pairs trade, it's called. But they add to the liquidity in the airlines. It's incredible, hundreds of millions of dollars trade a day. So it's a very liquid asset class. It's more volatile than the stock market because their biggest line item of expenses is oil. So it moves around with oil prices. What we have seen is the emergence of various, very sophisticated treasury departments out of airlines who are hedging. And they all have different hedging models. Some hedge half of their bookings going out 6 months. Other do it 9 months. Some hedge 100%. Some hedge 50%. Delta is the most unique in respect that they bought their own refinery as their hedge. So I think you have to look at the different various airlines who the hedge funds will look at, who they deem is the most sophisticated, who is unhedged. And that is great because when you look at an economy or you look at Jets ETF, you have to look at its ecosystem of investors. So everyone wants to make money, but there's different amounts of money they expect to make, and there's different strategies to make within Jets. So we have those who are going short and going long Jets. Then we have those who want to trade oil directly. So we do know this oil prices fall below their 50-day, that there's an oil trader that comes in to buy the airlines. And so I find that really fascinating that it adds to the immense liquidity that the ETF has.
And in terms of the ETF itself, right, on that idea of the strategies that it uses, I noticed that it's quite a holistic approach to the Jets theme, right? Insofar as it also has airports, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. And I think it's also because of the portfolio construction is looking for the cheapest stocks on a price to EBITDA basis. And then it's looking for momentum of revenue last quarter over the four quarters on a relative basis. And then it's looking for who has the biggest travel capacity. And what makes it unique also is that we own a lot of public airports. So De Gaulle Airport is public. Bangkok is public. Beijing is now on a tear. It's public. In Mexico, where there's a lot of travel from Europe going to Mexico and from America going for tourism, many of the airlines are listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And those airports run like they're private equity. And so they have a different business model, but you can't fly unless you go through an airport. Now, in America, none of these airports are public because it's a big business center for the local communities, because all the local towns and cities in America have noted that the more there's air travel going into their city, that there's greater business activity and it's better economic resilience. So there's a big encouragement that it's a way to entice people and businesses to come to various cities. What's exciting is that you're seeing various countries like Bangkok go to raise big capital for spending $5 billion on an airport. They do it through a public mechanism. And Jets owns those. Turkey is a big destination, and it's a huge hub for all of Africa and Eastern European countries. And the airports there are public.
And in your view, Frank, you know, we've spoken a lot about the Jets ETF, right? And it has this holistic approach to the airlines theme. What sort of investor do you think that this ETF particularly appeals to, in your view?
Well, I think that the smarter ones are going to be GARP investors, because on a relative basis, this the industry trades at a lot less multiples. If you look at forward earnings models, the trains and trucks trade at much higher. But trains and trucks are predominantly domestic travel. You're not going to get the global phenomena. whereas Jets is a global beast, and cargo, moving cargo by airlines is all, it's a global phenomena. And so I remain very positive that the world is not synchronized like it was from 2001 to 2008. We have this sort of synchronized growth model. We have some sort of idiosyncrasies taking place because of COVID, but we're a couple of years past that, and all the lockdowns and are behind us. So I think various countries are going to compete for tourism and for business activity. So I remain very bullish on this particular ETF because it really does have a holistic, it relates to GARP investors, growth at a reasonable price. It relates to asset allocators who are looking because it represents 9% of global GDP. It relates to speculators who are trading in and out short term on the movements around oil prices. It relates to the hedge funds that have various airlines, they want to go short, but they don't want to take the risk of being wrong. So they hedge themselves by going long Jets. So it has a broad ecosystem that's so important that really shows up in trading by trading hundreds of millions of dollars a day.
And beyond that, in your view, what do you think are the sort of main challenges that are facing the airline industry? I mean, we've talked a lot about this sort of recovery from COVID, but what's next in your eyes?
To get back to the capacity. You know, when we think of Asia, was a third of all luxury goods and a third of all growth in travel. And that comes back to the rising of the middle class. I also follow gold, and I wrote books on gold. And it's really interesting that the big demand for gold is love. The rising GDP per capita of China and India and the Middle East and Southeast Asia is strongly correlated to the demand for gold, because there's a cultural affinity towards gold, which has now become a cultural affinity towards luxury goods. Well, guess what? They want to go to Europe. They want to fly to Europe. And that's just a big boom for tourism in Europe. And what I saw in Milan is that there's these direct flights from China, many cities in China, to Milan, and they don't have to go to Paris. They can just stay there and buy Chinese luxury goods. And the first to drop tariffs and make it easier, the most accelerated country in Europe to make it easier in China to travel to Europe was Spain. So Spain was the first to see the biggest boom in the travel and luxury spending. So I've got this sort of triangle that I'm looking at of luxury goods sales, China travel, and looking at purchasing manufacturers index, because it says 50% of all commodity demand is China, and they're making a lot of products that are then coming back to Europe. And now they're starting business travel to come back to Europe, and Europeans are flying, going back to China. I think this is very, very positive, but they're still far away from where they were pre-pandemic. And that means upside, the future. They're going back under pre-COVID. Well, look what happened in America. Look what the airlines did. And look at what's taking place in Europe with EasyJet. EasyJet's up 57%. Why? Because people can't wait to go to get into warmer weather.
And lots of airlines are expanding their sort of range of destinations, right? I mean, I think EasyJet's one of them. They're doing more locations in Europe than they have previously.
They are, and but they're still challenged with pilots, the number of pilots. And a big part of that is you're seeing that the airlines used to have early retirement was like 60 years old, then they moved it to 62, then 65. In South Korea and Japan, they moved it up to 68. And reasons for this is because the pilots are healthier, but there's a shortage of pilots. Well, where do they used to get most of their pilots from? Military, Air Force. But what's happening is that more and more of these young kids are flying drones. They're not flying jets. So there's a shortage of learning how to fly at military schools around the world to go into this industry. So now you're seeing a lot of money going in to train people to become pilots. But 6 years ago, they increased the number of hours that was required for you to be able to fly a commercial airline. It used to have 1,000 hours, but then he took it up to 3,500 hours. Well, that restriction just means there's more stress on finding competent, skilled, with that tacit knowledge of knowing how to land on all these different runways, flying all these different jets. You need to have someone that has that hands-on tacit experience. I give a funny humor to it. It's like someone can pass their driver's license, but that doesn't mean they're a good driver. They have to drive the roads. And the same thing is with pilots. They can go past all the academic tests, but that doesn't mean they have the skill. So there's a pent-up demand for making simulators. There's a pent-up demand for training and recruiting. And so I see this industry is going to have tremendous pricing power, not an oversupply of pilots, which then lends itself to oversupply of competition and pricing.
Which could all mean that airlines will be taking flight in 2023 and beyond.
Yes. And whenever you have pent-up demand and limited supply, then you have pricing power and prices go up. You know, one of the things that relate to the airlines industry, you got to think of the pilots as an example, is in luxury goods, is Hermes. You can go in an Hermes, you can buy scarves, you can buy belts, but you can't buy their two highest-end purses. Only two purses per person per year. So they limit the supply, so the aftermarket has double the price. But if you go buy Hermes purse and you flip it immediately and they find out, you can't buy another purse. You're basically blacklisted. It's amazing. Well, Ferrari did that a long time ago, that if you were able to be in line to get a Ferrari and you flipped it before it was delivered to someone else, you never got a chance to go and buy a new Ferrari. And Ferrari cars, that's another stock that saw its earnings up 25%.
Well, fantastic. Frank, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. For those of you who are listening to this, if you're interested in hearing more about the Jets ETF, you can head to our website at hanetf.com. As I said before, the US Global Jets UCITS ETF aims to capture this recovery of the global airline industry. So, please do check it out. And all this have to do is thank Frank for coming on the podcast.
Great. Wheels up. Stay positive.
Thanks, Frank. It's been brilliant to have you. And thank you, everyone who tuned in. And see you next time. Thank you.